This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Last year on Christmas morning, Tyra Patterson walked out of prison a free person for the first time in 23 years. It's been 6 months since that cold, happy morning, and Tyra has been working hard to create a new life for herself. We are joined today by Tyra Patterson, the Community Outreach Strategy Specialist for the Ohio Justice and Policy Center, and Executive Director of the Ohio Justice and Policy Center, OJPC, David Singleton. David is also an assistant professor at NKU's Salmon P. Chase College of Law. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Tyra, David, really good to have you here today.
Good to be here.
Thank you for having us.
And Tyra, it's been 6 months, almost exactly, is that today's the 21st. So how has those 6 months in short been for you?
It's been a blessing and so many opportunities.
You know, as I was writing this morning for the intro, there's a temptation to say, rebuild your life. But you were so young when you were convicted, you had never really put an adult life together before.
I have not.
So you're doing it now.
I am. The opportunities that I have here in Cincinnati have created a lot of responsibility, and I take challenge and full force of them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. David, just very quickly, because I want to dwell on what Tyra is doing now, or focus on what Tyra is doing now. But just summarize the case as you got involved in it about, what, 8 years ago now?
It was actually October of 2012, so a little over 5 years, coming up on 6 years.
Okay. And so what were the questions? Because you don't run the Innocence Project. You run OJPC, which is very different.
It's very different.
So this was not your typical case.
No, this is not the kind of case that's in our wheelhouse. We typically don't do innocence cases because we've got the finest Innocence Project in the country at University of Cincinnati. But Tyra had written to our office and some folks who were advocating for us to take it because OIP, the Innocence Project, wouldn't take her case because there was no DNA evidence that could exonerate her. But for your listeners, basically what happened was in 1994, she was in a parking lot with her best friend as a robbery was happening. She wasn't involved. Tyra was not involved in a robbery. She actually tried to stop it. She went home after the robbery was going on and somebody got shot. And she went home and called 911, did the responsible thing. And she winds up the next day being thrown into an interrogation room and threatened with spending the rest of her life in prison, and wound up falsely confessing to taking a necklace during the robbery. It never happened. And it was a real tragedy because she didn't get the representation that she should have gotten. And fortunately, partly as a result of the work that we did, but eventually the victim who asked Tyra to come forward and stop the robbery, she came forward herself to say Tyra was innocent. And that happened back in March of 2016. And we were luckily able to get her released on parole, I think, in large part because of that.
Tyra, I suspect you can go back to Christmas morning.
I can.
And figure out how you felt at that moment walking out. Did you ever really – were you always convinced it would happen, or had you at times given up on the idea that you would be able to convince the legal system that a wrong had been done?
No, I didn't have doubt. I knew that I would walk out someday, and that's why I prepared myself while I was inside the institution with great opportunities. On Christmas Day, I felt exonerated. Although I am faced with barriers today with my parole, I knew that day was going to come.
So you say you prepared yourself while you were in prison.
I did.
What did that look like? What did you do to get yourself ready for whenever the day came?
I used my incarceration as my education. I went to prison not knowing how to read or write. I dropped out of school when I was only 11 years old in elementary school. And I educated myself when I was in prison. Today, I'm a licensed engineer. I started a paralegals course because I wanted to give back what was given to me by the Ohio Justice and Policy Center. So I did many things to prepare myself for today, to live a productive lifestyle.
So, David, one of the things, we know each other a little bit. I know this just became a real commitment of yours to get Tyra out of prison. OJPC offered her a job. You wanted to make sure there was some place to go right away. And you sort of created a new type of position for OJPC, right?
Well, we obviously wanted to see Tyra with a place to work, but I became impressed with her actually right away. And then over the course of 5 years, it was obvious that we'd be making a mistake if we didn't find a spot for Tyra at OJPC. And she started as a paralegal, and she's good at that. We're working some cases together now. But we just watched her energy and the way she just goes and goes and goes. And she's a social butterfly. She's the most extroverted person I know. And she knows so many more people in Cincinnati than I know. And I've lived here now for close to 20 years. And the point being is that she is becoming the face of OJPC. And that's why we created this this new position for her, where she's basically our director of engagement, community engagement.
Community engagement.
That's really what she's excelling at.
Tyra, you mentioned that there's been ups and downs
yeah.
in the past 6 months. What have been some of the highest points for you when you felt best about, yeah, I got that done, I finally have put that in place, or whatever it might be?
I think for me, my highest point has been meeting the different people in my life, meeting the positive people in our communities that's doing something so extraordinary, surrounding myself with people who are challenging me for me to be the best I can be has been my highest moment. People believing in me.
One of the things that you do, I know, is you go out and you talk in schools.
I do.
And what's that like? I mean, what do you, I presume you talk about your situation, your experience, right?
Mm-hmm. That experience is very challenging because our children are very vulnerable, and it takes a lot for them to start trusting people, and I allow them to trust me. And how I do that is by being transparent, keeping my promises, going to their graduation and their current events that they are having so that they can count on me.
What have been some of the bumpy parts of being on the outside and putting a life together?
I know that I will never be able to catch up with the world. However, I've had a few obstacles, and we know of one of them with Fifth Third Bank. So that was pretty discouraging to have so many barriers
and
placed
what,
before us.
Just some people, a lot of people may have read about that in the paper mm-hmm. or seen. I first heard about it on David's Facebook page.
Yes.
But just say what happened there.
David and I was finally able to get an ID after carrying around my prison ID for 2 months. So I was really excited to finally open an account and be responsible with my monies. So I went in there ecstatic about opening up account with Fifth Third Bank. And I sat down, and the guy, he said, "We can't help you." He didn't explain to me the reasoning or even guide me to another bank. However, with that being said, we changed our policy within 48 hours, and PNC welcomed me with open arms and humanizing me again.
And I'm going to make both things. PNC opened it up. But some changes occurred at Fifth Third, too.
That's right. And I do remember what they said to Tyra when they said, "No, we're not going to let you open an account." They said, "Well, because you just got your driver's license today, we need to see, a passport. Do you have a passport?" And I was thinking to myself, how does she have a passport? She just got out of prison. Mm-hmm. They needed some other form of identification. And I even said, "Listen, I will vouch for her. I'm her employer. I'm a lawyer. She works at our law firm." And they weren't hearing it. And that was probably the maddest I've been in the 6 months that Tyra's been released.
And please understand, they did reach out and apologize.
They did.
So thank you to Fifth Third Bank.
And right. Thanks for changing their policy. And now yes. They don't require that second form of identification if there are other ways to verify somebody's
identity. That's why I wanted to make it clear that both things happened. Both you found a bank that would open an account for you, but Fifth Third higher ups said, wait a minute, what's our policy?
Yes.
And so you got to change policy. And there's a problem for people coming out of prison with the, you know, what ID do you have?
Yes.
This is a real problem for people, right?
It is. And that's one thing I like about Ohio Justice and Policy Center, because we do have a second chance clinic with one of our lawyers, Dorian Mason and Sheila Donison. They make sure that we help those who are returning to society.
Returning citizens, yeah.
Yes. And but it's so many more changes that need to be made. And there's so much more that we can do. However, we are limited with the barriers that our community face.
How many, on the little things of life, I mean, you wouldn't have necessarily thought a bank account was going to be a big thing, but it did turn out to be a big thing. But on the little things, mm-hmm. you know, getting used to going to restaurants, controlling your own schedule, mm-hmm. Finding out, I don't know, whatever it might be, what were some of the things that have surprised you that caused you to say, you said something before about catching up, mm-hmm. you know, sort of play that out for me a little bit.
Okay, I am computer illiterate. However, I learn every single day working at the law firm. The ladies in there, they teach me, they show me if I have any questions. Catching up, I would have to say everybody is so antisocial, and I want to bring back that community, that unity.
What do you mean by that?
Speaks up again. Meaning everybody is on our technology and our cell phones, and we forget to say hello or how are you today. And so that's where me and Tamaya Denard, we became really close friends and started this Something Warm, because we miss that. We miss that peace in our community, and it's so very vital and so important that we acknowledge one another, give one another a second chance, an opportunity to have confidence. Because my whole theory is, like, I want to start this reentry mentorship, because it's important that we welcome our returning citizens, because one day we are going to be your neighbors. And if we equip them with the right resources available, then the crimes in our community will stop and our mass incarceration will decrease.
David, this is a legal question. We've just gotten an email. And by the way, our print is so small, old guys like me can hardly read it. But Bob says, teens like Tyra are routinely read Miranda rights, yet police cause suspects to make false confessions.
True.
How common is that, and from a lawyer's point of view?
False confessions are very common, and we know that thanks to the work of Innocence Projects, mm-hmm. because of the 340-plus people that have been exonerated by DNA across the country, meaning that science has proven that they're innocent, 25% of those cases involve false confessions. And usually they happen in cases involving young people who are not familiar with the criminal justice system, as Tyra was not. She had never been in trouble before. And detectives get trained in how to exert psychological pressure on people to get them to talk. And that's what happened in Tyra's case, and it happens to so many other people throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. And thankfully, David, that they changed the law. Now when you are being questioned, you have to be videoed the whole entire time, whereas back in 1994, they only recorded such a small portion of that.
Sort of the confession mm-hmm. itself.
Yep. And that's only, though, for homicide cases.
Yes.
Okay. So, Tyra, obviously, you came through this horrific experience of being in prison for 23 years, mm-hmm. and you've come out a smiler.
I did.
But for how many people does prison do just the opposite and break their will and break their belief in themselves, so that even if they got released, it's really that much more problematic?
It is. That's why I'm here, because I want to help change that paradigm, because it is so important, like I said earlier, for us as a society to embrace our returning citizens. It is hard, because I watch the ladies come back and forth to prison, and I would ask them, what's wrong out in our communities? Why are you back? What resources didn't you were offered? And so I went to the core of the problem, and I wanted to know what we in our community could do better.
So what are some of those things that we could do better?
Some of those things is not just showing them where the resources are, but taking them, believing in them, taking them by the hand, because it was so hard for me whenever I first got out. I didn't have food in my refrigerator. I was let out with no coat on Christmas Day with $75, and I had to start from the bottom. But if I didn't have my reentry mentors and people believing in me, somebody like me would have, not me, myself, but others would have reverted back to their old behaviors, and the cycle continues.
Yeah. Can I just say, we put together a team of 13 mentors for Tyra, and we pitched that.
13?
There were 13.
Yes.
But the funny thing is that the parole board, when we had her hearing, they scoffed at that. They were like, why does she get mentors and other people don't have mentors coming out? And why should she have 13? And my response to that was, everybody should have that that community of people who are going to help them overcome the challenges and deal with life back in the community, particularly after being away for 23 years.
And each mentor, they play their different roles in my life, which is very important. I have people like Michelle Young, Iris Rowley, people who matters, who have a voice in my life.
You know, you mentioned the ID as a problem. What are some of those other practical problems that people who are being released, maybe not because their decision was overturned or anything, but simply they had served their time, they're being released, they're getting the $75 and whatever. What else, on a very practical level, do people need coming out of prison that they don't have access to?
Transportation. Transportation is a big thing, especially if you are a woman with children. Affordable housing. I am struggling where I live, but however, that's my responsibility, and I don't make it my barrier. I do whatever I need to survive.
When you say transportation, are you talking about transportation back to your community, or are you talking about once you get back, just day-to-day transportation?
Day-to-day transportation. I don't think that's one thing that's missing from our community. We have housing, which is halfway houses and job opportunities for those who are hiring returning citizens. But however, we are missing something. And that's something that we at Ohio Justice and Policy Center are talking about.
David will know where this question's coming from. But what about people who are on meds and maybe on meds to control mental health issues, and they're released? What happens to their prescriptions? What happens to their ability to get those meds?
Well, yeah, we were actually involved in a lawsuit, class action lawsuit, because before the lawsuit, folks were getting out with 14 days of medication, and that's it, and no connection to services in the community. That has changed, and now partly because you're able to sign up for Medicaid before you release, folks at least have a way to pay for their medication, and they are getting referred to providers in the community. That said, there's still much more work to be done, and for some communities where there are not a lot of service providers, it's a real problem.
That transition stage.
Yes, it is. Well, David, I do have to push back on that a little bit, because I suffer with three diseases. I have Crohn's, colitis, and lupus. And I was just told that my insurance will not cover it, whereas when I first came home, they helped me out for a month. So our returning citizens is still facing that barrier. But there's a bail initiative that's going around. And so hopefully people are interested in signing that.
So just recognizing that transitional stage from release to whatever the period of time is, I'm not sure exactly how much we should say that should be, but needing a variety of different types of assistance, mentors, 13, whatever. How many of those 13 men, mentors are still around?
Every last one of them.
Okay. So you could pick up the phone right now?
Yes. I can pick up the phone and call Miss Jean Smet, and she will go jogging with me. I can. Every last one of them is there. Not only are they there, there's added reentry mentors. I have so many people who are in my life who makes a difference that I can count on.
Tyra, I don't know. I could ask this question. How long did it take before you felt like you were home? Or do you yet feel like you're home?
I am still swimming in gratitude. And I'm still living free. Every single day, I am thankful for the opportunities that the Ohio Justice Policy Center gave to me.
David, we got less than a minute here, but what did you learn from this whole experience?
The importance of humanity and not writing someone off. Obviously, I was never going to write Tyra off, and her spirit just leaps out at you when you first meet her. But Tyra just mentioned Jean Smet. She mentioned Michelle Young. Joe Dieters is one of her mentors.
It isn't necessarily predictable in terms of party alignment.
It is not.
Exactly.
It is not. And that's
exactly
part of the thing that we need to realize as a community. This is a great story, not only because it's about this person that overcame some odds and educated herself and is now a member of our community, but it's also about bringing people together. And Tyra's been really good at that, and we've helped to bring that about, and we feel proud about it.
Well, Tyra Patterson, David Singleton, it is really wonderful to have you here today.
Thank you.
Good luck in the next few months as you continue to put the pieces together.
Yes, sir.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The intern is Layla Shukui. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.